business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Hello and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show. This is your host, Rick Franzi. I host the Business Talk Show, which airs live on Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons, 4 p.m., heard exclusively here on octalkradio.net. If you're listening to this show at some point in the future, and it's a podcast, either off of Apple iTunes or another podcasting service that we promote with our shows, I would encourage you to listen to one of the live broadcasts. As I said, heard exclusively here on octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, to make better business decisions. And we do that by interviewing thought leaders and peer executives who have transferable knowledge, ideas, and experiences. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. If you'd like to learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. And when you get there, select the local journal section for Orange County, and you'll see content specifically designed for us here in Orange County. Critical Mass, the radio show, is an extension of our 17-year consulting practice. One of the things we do, build CEO peer groups for executives and business owners in Orange County. We do this in partnership with Renaissance Executive Forums. Executive Forums is an international organization committed to helping business members take their business to the next level. My business partner, Doug DeFeller, and I currently chair multiple CEO peer groups. Doug is a master certified coach, which is a distinction achieved by less than 900 certified coaches in the world. Doug is our lead partner in charge of our coaching practice. Doug hosts a call-in talk show right here on octalkradio.net called The Coaching Perspective. Yeah, be sure to tune in this time slot on Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m., or possibly you can catch it on iTunes or another service as a podcast. My book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, is the first book ever written about the peer group experience, and it's available for sale on Amazon.com. You can find it simply by typing in my name, Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. So if you'd like to learn more about our CEO peer groups or our executive coaching practice, I would suggest you check out our website, www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. If you'd like to join the conversation today, then I would suggest you visit octalkradio.net's website, go to their community chat room, log on. My producer Paul and I will be monitoring your comments throughout the show, and possibly we'll bring your thoughts onto the show here today. I'd like to turn my attention to our guest today, Frank Jacks of Chromadex. I'm excited to have Frank on the show, and we're going to dedicate a good portion of the show to the conversation that we have here on Critical Mass, the radio show. And Frank, welcome to the show today.
Thank you for inviting me.
We're glad to have you here. Why don't we start and get right into the interview, Frank? And if you could talk to our audience a bit about your professional path that predates Chromadex.
Well, my background ultimately is chemistry. Background by degree, not necessarily business, I guess. But I went and after graduating, I started a chemistry firm out of Los Angeles or Torrance area called Phenomenex, which was an analytical chemistry company. And that's where the sort of the background or the concept or idea for Chromadex had come from. That's where the basis of the idea for Chromadex to a certain extent had come from as well.
So if I understood that correctly, Frank, Chromadex is the second firm that you started?
It wasn't the second firm. I wasn't a founder of the other company. I did get on fairly early stage when that was a small company, and it went through a fairly rapid growth phase during the 7 or 8 years that I was there.
And so while you were working there, you sort of developed the inspiration for Chromadex. Tell me, first of all, why you thought the world needed a firm like Chromadex, and then what is it specifically that your firm does?
Well, the idea came from I was part of the international business team at Phenomenex, and the concept was the idea or the pain that Chromadex serves basically in terms of the market. The idea had come from talking to customers related to phenomics, analytical chemistry guys who are asking for these things that didn't exist in the marketplace. And that moving into what we do is essentially we have a catalog, a 500-page catalog of phytochemicals. Phytochemicals are chemicals that essentially are purified or isolated from plants or botanicals. And that is the sort of the core of our business and our expertise is really in natural products.
I tweeted just before the show started, and my tagline or my tease was, what is a botanical reference standard? And if people were interested in learning more to listen into our interview here today. So you're dealing with terms and in an industry that possibly the layperson or maybe a larger segment of our audience may not be that familiar with. I know I certainly wasn't until we began our conversations last year, Frank. So could you share a little bit with us who are the clients? What's the market space? Help us understand the business opportunity around what it is you do with your company.
Well, the phytochemicals or the botanical reference standards, which really represent sort of the core of our business, are we sell research tools or quality control tools to companies that include natural products or natural product-related ingredients. And even though some people may not know that or say that they don't necessarily know, in reality, these products are in front of you every day, and you just have to sort of look around and you'll realize that the some examples of that is the stevia sweetener. Cargill is currently selling a product called Truvia, which is fairly heavily advertised on TV. That's a natural product. Chromatix happens to be one of the exclusive suppliers of the individual phytochemicals from stevia that are used to test these products. And that's kind of the core of what our business is related to is research and sort of quality control of these natural products that are now being included in say foods, beverages, dietary supplements, cosmetic products. And natural is the clean, the green, the sustainable, and the natural is sort of the hot ticket right now. And there isn't a day in the media right now where you hear about PepsiCo or Coca-Cola or Kraft Foods trying to substitute away from legacy ingredients that have a negative perception that are not natural and substitute those with natural ingredients.
I guess that that is teasing out sort of what I was curious about, one of the things, Frank, which is there has been a overall green movement and a certainly from what we can see certainly here in Orange County in Southern California, but I think in other parts of the U.S. and around the world, a realization about the types of additives or whatever that may be added to foods and a desire to be more maybe plant-based or natural in the ingredients.
Right.
Is that macro trend benefiting Chromatix then?
Absolutely. I like to say that there's nobody who stands to benefit from that movement more than we do. I mean, when I started Chromatix, it was a hard sell. There was a lot less people that were focused on this, and as the movement stampeded in the direction that it's moving right now, it's definitely very beneficial for us. I mean, we're the tool maker here, kind of, if you want to look at it. We make the pickaxes and the supplies. We're not the gold. We're not the miner. And the tools that we're supplying are necessary for these companies to basically do what they do in the research and the quality end.
So when you started Chromatix, and I want to say that was 1999, is that true?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. Did you anticipate this tailwind macro trend materializing, or have you been able to capitalize on it by virtue of the space that you were in at the time?
I'll say that we sort of saw this coming. If you read if you went and read our full, 75-page business plan that was written at the tail end of 1999, it basically tells a story that we believed that this was going to happen. So I do, I guess, have some written record of sort of foreshadowing that it was coming.
It's always exciting for me as the host of Critical Mass when I have entrepreneurs on the show to have them talk about the I kind of put it in a phrase, why do you think the world needed a firm doing what your firm is doing? But there is that opportunity that entrepreneurs, when they see a market or a potential gap that they can fill, that they take the risk and make that step forward. And certainly in 1999 and at the turn of the century, you positioned the firm that has really performed very well here on some very technical, but as you explain them, become very easy to understand. And I appreciate your willingness to kind of share and demystify a little bit about what ChromaDex does. Thanks, Frank. Let's turn our attention to the next question I want to ask you, which is a question we ask each of our guests. Of all the particular experiences and lessons that you've learned in your business experience, is there a guiding principle that you have today, Frank, for how you lead ChromaDex into the future?
Well, I mean, the core guiding principle is, we'd like to differentiate ourselves from sort of the core by being a little, we don't sit back and wait for things to come to us. I mean, we take a much more aggressive stance in essentially going and taking, by actively pursuing and going after business. So we're not a build it and they will come sort of a mentality. And I try to make sure that from everybody here, whether it's, there's importance in an accountant that is sending out an invoice, even though sometimes people say, well, I just send out the invoices. Well, it's not quite that simple. It's a customer interaction. That invoice is going to a customer. Or anybody here that has interaction, and I'd like to define it that saying, if you don't have an interaction with the customer at some level or perceive that you do, then why are you employed at the company? So everybody here, to a certain extent, has sort of that sales mentality, and we try to maintain that at all levels, regardless if it's somebody in our accounting group making a call to collect money, because that could have a potential impact on things. And we like to take a more aggressive stance towards that in terms of our strategy.
So do you attribute your aggressive sales strategy and your belief that, you can't wait for the to find contributing to the success of ChromaDex as compared to maybe others in your industry and how they approach the marketplace?
Well, most, and the Phenomenex and us, I would say, are in certain ways, the company I was at before and now ChromaDex, is that you tend to have scientists that are the founders of these companies. The laboratories that are our competition, the other companies that we have that are our competition, tend to be scientist-based organizations. Not to say that we're not. We are to a certain extent as well, but we try to twist that into moving away from the science more into the business side of things. And we don't take a – most founders or founding scientists of these companies tend to take a more build-it-and-they-will-come attitude. They believe if they build it, the people will have to come to them. And that's exactly what we try not to get across.
I thank you for sharing that. Many times as in technology companies as well, many times funded by engineers, there is a similar belief system that this new widget will, people will rush to buy it because it is of its obvious improvement over the market standard. And
right.
Not always the case.
I would say that you're right about that, and we look at it the same way. I mean, you could have the best invention in the world. That doesn't mean that it's guaranteed that you're going to sell anything. Without an aggressive sales and marketing strategy, it's very rare that somebody's going to come up with something and it's going to be a runaway success. And I'm not going to build my model around the one in a million companies that are successful that way. You have to take an assumption of the other way around, which is that you're going to have to put hard work into getting there.
There was a Dilbert comic strip, and I'm paraphrasing at best right now, Frank, but it was something along the lines that the boss was explaining their new product strategy, and a key element of their strategy was that customers for this new product would come to their shipping dock to demand the new product. Which is, you know, Dilbert's way of kind of, I think, pointing out what you and I are talking about here to some degree. At least I think so.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. As you know, from my book, Critical Mass, The 10 Powers of the CEO Peer Groups, and from your conversations, our conversations in kind of preparing for this interview today, I like to have the guest relate a direct experience where they have either benefited or now looking back on it, maybe realized how much more they could have benefited from obtaining outside perspective. Outside, I mean, not resources and individuals directly related to your business, either because you work for them, they work for you, or you pay them in some indirect or direct way. Frank, could you share with us today maybe some example in your background where people outside the firm have been beneficial in helping you to make better decisions, Promodex forward?
Right. Well, I mean, my ex-boss at Phenomenex has been over the past 10 years and continues to support or give me outside support, and I still rely on that fairly heavily, and I call him as often as I can, because I mean, it's not, we're in related industries, we're definitely different companies. We're actually a customer of theirs now, but you know, I can bounce if things like tend to get a little hard, or the market seems to be a little bit soft, I'll pick up the phone and give him a call and say, what's going on? Are you guys noticing this, the same trend? He's like, oh yeah, if they're noticing the same trend, then I know that at least from a rational perspective, you know, are we an island, or are our peers in terms of similar or like-minded companies, are they having the same issues that we are? And That can be helpful. So that's one area, or one person, I would say, that I've fairly heavily relied on over the past 10 years for advice.
Could I ask if is there another example of a mentor or someone outside that you would like to share with us as well?
There's several, actually. we have. You know, our as a public company, we have board of directors, and the board of directors that we have are, you know, technically independent board of directors. Also, are a great system for me formally, because we have to have a board of directors in place. It's a great formal system for us, and I take advantage of it by calling certain board of directors to rely on their range of expertise for certain situations. Sometimes maybe even calling in them into meetings in some cases. Another example is we have a new investor that we just took on, Dr. Phil Frost, and the Frost Group placed a fairly large investment with us in mid-2010, and he's also now become, from a mentor standpoint, is also again, somebody that I'm leaning on for advice and looking to for advice for certain situations as well.
I sort of recall in our conversation that Dr. Frost has kind of been there, done that on some of the things in his professional background. I call them business Sherpas, you know, people who can sort of help entrepreneurs and business leaders navigate the mountain, you know,
right,
understand where the rocks and the dangers are and how the clearest path to get to the next stage is. And he certainly sounded like that for you when we had that conversation.
No doubt about that. I mean, you don't become a billionaire, without having experience. And, you know, he's made a lot of mistakes, and he's had a lot of successes. And by having that over the years, it's a great person to have in the quiver to rely on as somebody to go to for that type of advice.
You know, there are a lot of family businesses and privately held firms that, in addition to public companies that join CEO peer groups, many times those non-public firms, the private firms, don't have a formal board of directors and don't even have an informal board of directors. Sometimes they have a family board, but many times it's really not as robust as certainly a public company's board of directors with independent directors are. And a peer group can function many times as an advisory board to sort of help cover that gap. It is a real opportunity. And I'm encouraged to see how you take advantage of that when you have a robust board of directors who have experience and knowledge.
as the CEO of a company to leverage that experience to the, to better improve the quality of the decisions that you're making in running the business. Because as you're going through revenue, I'm sure there are a whole new set of challenges that that face you on a regular basis.
Absolutely. And I mean, if I didn't have you know, a formal board like we have in place, and if I didn't have access to, you know, other outside parties to use as a sounding board, I would say that I would probably be trying to seek out some sort of a peer group to join. I guess I'm lucky in the fact that I've got a quite diverse, you know, personal ChromaDex peer group that we've put together that has become my sounding board.
Exactly. And it's evidenced in the performance of the firm since 1999, and kind of how you continue to grow. And we're going to talk about growth here in a couple minutes, but before we get there, let me point you in a little different direction and say, can you share with our audience a current challenge that's facing ChromaDex and the steps that you're taking or have taken to mitigate that challenge by the business?
Well, I mean, we're a double whammy. We're not only a small company, we're a small public company. So we're saddled with, you know, we have limited resources, and being a small company is tough. I mean, you don't have an infinite pool of people to pull from to get things done. You all have to throw in, and everybody has to do a little bit of everything sometimes. And the lack of, I would say, in a lot of cases, human resources is a significant disadvantage. And if you ever come from or had worked for a large company and move it to a small company, it becomes fairly apparent.
Oh, that, as you say that, Frank, I think of the time that I went from, well, let's see, I went from a $3 billion, running a division of a $3 billion company to working for a $40 million company that was going through an IPO, working with a longtime friend of mine, starting a company from scratch. And each time, the resource pool shrunk dramatically. And my assumptions for how you did things and solved problems and put, you know, people on task had to completely I had to rethink all that just because it couldn't be done.
Right. I mean, that's the same thing what we face all the time, is that you have to be realistic. And, you know, for us, it's managing cash flow more than anything else. I mean, do I sit down and look at the – it's not even about profit so much as worrying about your cash flow. I'll take a cash flow positive company any day of the week. As a matter of fact, that's how we've grown the company. I mean, the company wasn't, you know, financed with some multi-million-dollar funding when we started the company. The company was bootstrapped up to the point that we've gotten it to. We didn't really significantly raise any money, so we got used to the concept of working based on cash flow.
It's interesting, Frank, because I hear that lament on occasion from different business leaders. There's the fundamental difference between your income statement and your statement of cash flows, especially as we end the fiscal year for many of them, where they're doing their tax statements. It's like, well, wait a minute, I got to come up with how much to pay the taxes when I know what it says, but I don't know that I have that in my cash reserves right now.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a big issue. I mean, you could end up with a strong profitable position at the end of the year and a $400,000 tax bill that you can't cover. It's not the first time that's ever happened. So
yeah, I don't mean to laugh, because it's not a funny situation, but it is kind of ironic. I tell you what, Frank, I'm going to continue the conversation in a minute, but I need to take a quick break for a minute with Smart Business Magazine. So we'll be back to Critical Mass, the radio show, in a minute.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to this edition of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. If you'd like to join the conversation, feel free to go to octalkradio.net's community chat room, log in, post your comments. My producer, Paul, and I are checking it periodically, and possibly we'll bring your thoughts onto the show. Our guest today is Frank Jax, CEO and founder of Chromadex. Frank, it's good to have you on Critical Mass, the radio show. Frank?
Oh, sorry, it broke up there for a second. I'm here, thanks again for having me.
Internet technology, it's not bulletproof. Could I ask you, and I had talked about how mid-market, small and mid-market companies are able to create differentiation. And I've identified four strategies, and we talk about many of them on here on the radio show. I'm wondering if you might spend a few minutes with our audience and share how a couple of those strategies are being employed by you at Chromadex to kind of create this differentiated company.
Right. Well, I mean, we differentiate ourselves by, you know, trying to at least maintain an maintain the one advantage you have of being a small company, sort of a little bit of a parallel to what we were just discussing before. There are advantages to small companies as well. And one of them is agility or being agile. And we have clients who essentially come to us because of the fact that they understand that we are small, we're nimble, and we're being more responsive or paying more attention to the marketplace, and we can be a lot more responsive than, say, a big company that gets bogged down in, say, politics. And we can be more responsive to those types of issues. And one of the ways that we're actually, it's a, sort of the second tier of our business model is on the innovation front, is that Chromadex actually leverages the information that we learn from our core business, the phytochemicals or the botanical reference standard side of things. And we leverage the information that we gain, and I'll call that market intelligence. And we'll take that and we'll spin it into either licensing intellectual property or filing patents to have our own intellectual property on areas that essentially, I wouldn't say that we're necessarily inventing these things in the sense that we're coming up with the initial ideas, but we're definitely being responsive to sort of foreseeing what the market needs are going to be, say, 3, 4, 5 years in advance. And then being nimble enough to take advantage of those where it would get lost in a larger company. It would take too much time.
I was really impressed, Frank, when you shared with me how your firm does that, because that's a learning organization, and that's really a smart thing to do when I agree, and I could see and I agree with you how a larger company, those may be two separate divisions with all the politics that come around two separate organizations, and just getting them to share information could be, in and of itself, an impossible task.
Exactly.
And so for your organization to be on point, to realize the competitive advantage that you have by virtue of that position, and then to leverage it, it's really a smart move.
And that's where we're really starting to gain our traction right now. And, you know, it's the one thing where we need more resources, that we've got a bag of ideas that, in terms of our product, our pipeline, or potential pipeline, I should say, is tremendous. It's actually a little even unbelievable to me sometimes when I look at it. But, again, the resource-strapped side, that's what gets in the way of that. But the agility has populated that list. And it's not only that, it's our reputation as well. I mean, we've spent the past 10 years developing a strong brand presence, and we have brand presence amongst some of the largest companies that are out there, either food, beverage, dietary supplement, or cosmetic. And we have the reputation as being the expert in the area of natural products chemistry, and now we can leverage that and moving it away from a, well, this is just a company that sells these small amounts of stuff for research purposes, to, oh my gosh, they have the keys to the kingdom and understanding where the market's going before the market knows where it's going.
Wow. It's a very exciting story, Chromadex, and I'm sure it is challenging to balance the resources and to make the bets. I'm sure many listening to this show are saying, I can somewhat empathize that, you know, and that's the job of the CEO is to figure out, okay, where am I going to get the best return on my either people investment or my actual cash investment, you know, for future product development?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's look back a little bit, and if could you share with the audience kind of a painful business lesson where you know, you learned something very valuable in your career, but it came kind of through a difficult situation?
Well, that goes back a ways, but the painful lesson I learned fairly early on, which is I think been very beneficial for my career along the way, but even back in my early 20s, I learned that a very basic concept of it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission. And I still believe very heavily in that. I would rather people make mistakes and do something rather than not do something because they're waiting to get somebody to sign off or ask for permission.
Can you share with us a little bit about how that shapes the culture at Chromadex?
Well, it helps shape it a lot because I want people to, we try to foster, the people here to not sit around and wait necessarily for, you know, every little decision. Of course, there's going to be decisions which are above their, you know, call it above their pay grade. But even then, you know, do I mind somebody sort of stretching the bounds? I don't mind as long as they're using some sort of rational thought and it makes sense and it, if it's a logical decision, then why wait necessarily to ask for permission to do something if it could be potentially detrimental to the company to wait?
And you know,
it's hard to get people to do that though, so.
Well, but it's an underpinning competency of having an agile company. And by that, what I mean, Frank, is my experience and our research shows that companies that have distributed decision-making that foster that sort of thinking and empowering their people to make decisions tend to also be agile in the marketplace because there's not that cycle time waiting for the CEO to the ruling. There's
right.
No replay judge here to kind of make the final decision for you.
And it's, you know, it's not a course without, I wouldn't say without pain, because I can tell you that, I mean, early stage, I mean, I made a lot of decisions on the fly and they were wrong. And did I get a little torn up as a result of it? Absolutely. I got in trouble for it. I had to learn the hard way by doing it. Did I stop doing that? Absolutely not. I mean, I kept going. I kept on making those mistakes, and you know, eventually, and occasionally, yes, I made mistakes to the point where it wasn't necessarily a pleasant situation, but you know, I still kept on that course.
I have seen some very large companies command and control mentality, where you know it's kind of top down, borrowed from the military or whatever it is, but it's centralized decision making, if you want to think of it that way. And one of the interesting attributes of that is that sometimes employees are able to not do something that even though they know they should do, because they're waiting to make sure they should be doing it. And so it not only can stunt people's creativity, it also, I think, sometimes can provide a little bit of cover for people who would rather not make a tough decision,
right,
by abdicating the responsibility because, well, we're never able to make those decisions, so I'll just
right.
have to wait for the quarter office to tell me what to do.
And it's absolutely right. I mean, I've seen that happen, and especially in big companies where you have that sort of a mentality in decision-making processes is, to me, a creativity killer. I mean, mm-hmm. How can you possibly be creative in an environment that requires sign-off at every level? Because how often is one idea going to ever pass through that many hoops? I mean, there's no way.
Right.
And that's how we see things get killed at our customer base. And we watch it happen live and in Technicolor. It happens every day. That guy's not going to make a decision. It's going to go to his boss. If you're lucky enough to get his boss to sign off, that it's going to go to that guy's boss. And then it gets killed.
Yeah, it only takes one no.
Exactly.
Right, but it takes 17 yeses, but only one no can kill it. And so what are the odds that that good things get killed?
Yeah. Well, that's why most, I mean, from a business person perspective, again, one of the lessons that I've learned in that, I would say, is that over the past 10 years of doing this at ChromaDex, is that if you want to do business with a large company, you got to start at the top and work your way back down. Because if you're trying to work from the bottom up, I mean, your chance of success is limited.
You could spend a lot of time and money believing you've got a business opportunity when, in fact, you never really did.
Well, you may have the best, if it gets back to the best idea in the world thing. If you're talking to the quality control chemist down at the bottom of the tier, your chance of actually getting that idea kicked through to the top is probably next to zero. So the easiest way I know of is build relationships and start leveraging the base to build relationships higher and higher and higher and higher up that organization. So when you're ready for the big idea to go in, you go right to the top.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was worth the price of admission right there, ladies and gentlemen. I love these learning moments on Critical Mass, the radio show. And Frank, I think in addition to other things that we've talked about, that is certainly one that's worth repeating, and hopefully people will take what you said and apply it in their business. I'd like to ask you, Frank, if we could talk about, of all the opportunities for growth that it sounds like ChromaDex has right now, could you share with us kind of one that is a current opportunity facing the firm that, if you'd leverage it, could really have a significant impact on the firm moving forward?
Well, the one significant thing that we have going up, you know, our catalog is obviously our base, but the one thing we have going right now that is going to, we've been waiting for this for a long time, and the opportunity is here in a product that we launched last year called TerraPure. TerraPure is an ingredient that we invented. We licensed a series of patents on this particular compound from the USDA. We brought the product to market formally in September of last year, and we're out there now kicking, you know, leveraging our reputation in the market to basically promote the science of that particular ingredient, which is an alternative to a compound that is a little bit more notoriety in the market, a grape seed or a grape or a wine, I should say, related compound called resveratrol. And this is our sort of next generation or next best version of that. That is actually a vastly superior version of the compound resveratrol.
Connection here for a second. I'm sorry, I stepped away from the board here at the second. Maybe you could just expand upon what you were talking about here for a second.
I'm back now, Paul.
Oh, you are? Okay, good.
I don't know where it dropped off, but I was talking about the TerraPure product that we launched last year, and that is an alternative compound to resveratrol, or a superior version of that we have quite a bit of intellectual property or patents on. That's going to be that's sort of our first proof of our business model, that we can essentially transfer, take idea flow through the core business and translate that into, or monetize that through taking intellectual property and bringing a bigger market potential to the market.
So that is strategically a revenue source, but also it's a validation of the which is the learning organization and somewhat a competitive advantage that you're sitting on at ChromaDex then.
Exactly. I mean, it's our first proof of the business model that we've had in place for, you know, for the past 10 years, and I would have to say that so far it's been it's been spectacular, the performance thus far. I mean, we still have a long way to go, mm-hmm. but the performance that we've had on that thus far has definitely been a good proof of the business model, that it will in fact work.
Wow. Well, that will be exciting to watch indeed. Frank, if someone would like to learn more about ChromaDex and you as the founder and CEO, et cetera, how do you suggest they do that?
Well, there's always our website, www.chromadex.com. But if even if you go to Google and either you type in my name or the company name, there's no shortage of collateral out there. We've been pretty aggressive, and there's a lot of media out there about ChromaDex. There's a lot of media out there about me or interviews or presentations related to things that I've done. So there is a lot of stuff out there.
Well, I appreciate all the stuff you shared inside the radio show interview here today on Critical Mass, the radio show. So, Frank, thank you for the time. Welcome to the business community for Critical Mass, and I appreciate you being a friend of the show.
Thanks again for inviting me.
I enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Yep, bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation today with Frank Jacks of ChromaDex. I was really quite impressed, and still am, frankly, even more now, impressed with the work that Frank is doing and the position of the firm. And as I said, I think there were several nuggets of good information and knowledge and transferred there, and hopefully you as our listening audience will take and apply some of the things, if you're not already doing it, that Frank and his executive team are doing to build and grow to your firm. You know, a large part of what we want to do with Critical Mass, the radio show, is to help ideas that you can apply in your business. I'd also like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal, and it provides insight and advice for top decision makers. If you would like to learn more about Smart Business Magazine, I'd say visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. There's a local journal section. Check the Orange County area, and there you'll see information and content specifically designed for business leaders in Orange County. If you'd like to learn more about Critical Mass for Business, please check out our website, www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. You know, until next show, this is Rick Franzi saying I hope that all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, only on OCTalkRadio.net.